You're listening to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast, the podcast that teaches self-published children's book authors how to use branding to connect with readers, leverage content to sell more books, and grow a business that goes beyond the book. Being a children's book author means you've found a unique way to deliver messages with words and illustrations. But to thrive as an independent publisher, you'll need to master the art of attracting and engaging with readers so that you can sell more books. Join me to learn proven marketing strategies that can be implemented without hassle or complexity to take your publishing endeavors to new heights. I'm your host, Michaela Simone Benn, mompreneur marketing maven, fellow self-published children's book author and content creator. Are you ready to define success on your own terms? Then let's get to it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela S. Benn. And joining me today is the savvy accountant, Miss Atiyah Brown. But let me tell you why she has been asked to come and talk with us today. Whenever we have these conversations, it's because there's something about the expertise or the area of interest that the guest has as a part of their wheelhouse. And I by no means am an accountant, nor do I play one on television. But Atiyah is. And the first time I had a chance to hear Atiyah speak about accounting was one of the first times that I did not have any questions or any confusion about what she was sharing, because it was so plain and simple and easy to understand. So I asked her to come onto the podcast to talk a little bit about aspects of taxes, things that you might want to know about that will help prepare you. So Atiyah, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
You're welcome. Well, I want to do the glance at this that says, okay, what should somebody know that can help them close out the year? But before we get into any of that, tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. So my name is Atiyah Brown. I am a CPA by trade. I'm licensed in both Canada and in the U.S. because I'm originally from Montreal, Canada. And I really love all things tax. I've always had an obsession with numbers. And so that translated to becoming an accountant while I was in university. I actually went to university for actuarial math, but I realized that I'm an extrovert. And so I took my first accounting class and I got really good at it. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll do the accounting instead of the actuary. That's what led me to my tax career. So yeah, I have a goal to help people in my community save $1 billion in tax savings, because I believe that wealth is something that you should be passing on to your children. And taxes are basically one of the biggest expenses that you're going to be paying. So if you can figure out how to reduce that legally, then you can help your family. And so that's what I aim to do.
You know, that's really important for us, because a lot of the people who are in our community who are children's book authors already don't realize that there's a need to really pay attention to tax matters that are separate for the business than they are from household finances. So let's start there. Talk a little bit about this, Atiyah. When we're talking about what we should know to distinguish what's household tax versus business tax, where do we even get started unraveling that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so that brings about the topic of what we call commingling. Commingling is when you have your personal and your business kind of all mixed up together, but you don't know when you're spending and it comes from the business side or it comes from your W-2 job. So you want to get in the habit of not commingling. So essentially, you want to set your business apart from the personal. What that looks like is making sure that you have separate accounts that are specifically for the business. You want to make sure that whatever deals with the business, that stays in its own silo versus the personal, where you have your W-2 job and all that other stuff that comes in, because you want to get in the habit of separating them. For tax purposes, depending on the type of entity structure you are, you don't want those two to be mixed up, because that can cause issues for you.
So when we're talking about commingling, we're talking about having two separate bank accounts.
Yes, two is the minimum that I would recommend, but you definitely want to make sure that the business has its own accounts. You might have a checking and a savings on the personal side, and you might want to do the checking and savings on the business side, or have multiple accounts, like for your tax account, your operating expenses, stuff like that. But you definitely want to make sure that it's very separate, it's distinguishable, that you know what is for the business, what's being paid for the business, what income is coming in from the business, because you want to make sure that that is being tracked. You definitely want to get into that habit early on.
All right. Now, for somebody who is just hearing that commingling is not the thing to do, what would you suggest they do within the next couple of days to make sure they are no longer commingling their funds and that they are beginning to distinguish business expenses from personal expenses?
That's a great question. And I tell people all the time, because a lot of times people hear things and then they panic. You cannot change the past. None of us have that power to do that. So if you were commingling this whole time, this is your opportunity to start doing it right from today. So the next few days, you can go to the bank, even if it's a bank that you're used to working with from your personal side, and go and ask to open a separate account. And from that day on, start using that account for the business. It's not something that you're able to correct in the past, because, you know, we don't have that power, but you can definitely start doing it correctly from now. Just go and open that separate account. If you have a separate business entity structure that's set up, take your EIN and open that account in your EIN so that it's separate. If you are a sole proprietor and doing business in your own name, then just open a separate account and have that account only for the business stuff so that you at least have that separation. Yeah, start from today.
Yeah. Now, there's an assumption I want to throw out, and it's that everybody comes into this space with making it a business in mind. By the time all of the illustrations are complete, by the time some of the administrative work is done, it may still be money coming straight from household funds, not business funds. So that also lends to someone who may not have set their business up to have its own entity. What are the first steps that someone should consider when they're thinking about making their children's book business go from hobby to business when it comes to setting up an entity?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I tell people all the time that when you're starting a business, funds aren't always available, but it's always a best practice to at least have a consultation with someone who can guide you in the right way. A CPA, an attorney, they're going to be able to tell you at the beginning what you should be considering, because you might not be considering entity structures, what that looks like. You don't know any of those things. I always tell people that at least having an initial consultation will help you get on the right path, because in order to determine the best entity structure, you're going to have to know that there are multiple entity structures that you can choose from. Knowing which step to take is going to depend on what entity structure is going to be the best for your situation. Typically, when people are going from, I didn't know that this was going to turn into anything, you're starting off as a sole proprietor, whether you know it or not. If you are doing commerce, you're selling a product or a service, and you're making money, you have expenses, but you haven't set anything up, you're a sole proprietor. You're doing it in your own name. And you can decide that, okay, well, now that this is growing more than I thought, now is when I need to do an entity setup. That would be you setting up the consultation and figuring out what entity is best for you. And then from there, going to your state, registering the business, then having an EIN set up with the IRS so that you can actually have that separate entity. It's really having that consultation to figure out what your goals are so that you know the next steps to take. Because a lot of times you start this as a passion project that kind of grows into something else. And so it's not necessary that you have to set up the business entity when you start, because a lot of people don't realize a sole proprietor is a business entity and you're able to do business as yourself.
Hey, it's Nikella. Real quick, I got a question for you. Have you already subscribed to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast? If you haven't, then I want to invite you to do that right now on your favorite streaming service. That way, you never miss an episode. Each time an episode goes live, you'll always be notified and it will be there waiting for you, so you never have to try to go find it and lose track of it among the hundreds of other things that you have going on. When you subscribe, you're showing your support, of course, and I appreciate that. So I want to thank you for tuning in. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, you just freed somebody right there. I've waited too late. The time has passed where setting up an entity is no longer something that you have to do. But realistically speaking, it's not too late. And based on what you just shared, the resources may not have been in place initially, but as time goes on, having them so that you can set that up is important. And it's important for a few different reasons in our space. One of the reasons is because we have the ability to apply for grants. And if we're submitting a grant application, there's a strong chance that one of the questions in said grant application asks, what's your business structure? And what's your employer identification number, your EIN? And if you don't have those, the chance of being approved for the grant, which should be requested in the name of your business, goes down significantly. Yep. It also kind of hurts us if we don't have it, if we don't have that ability to say that we're a business entity when we want to partner with other companies. So if we're partnering with someone and we're establishing the business, that lets our partners know that we are really serious about what we say we want to do. But if we haven't gone through the necessary steps to set it up, they're like, okay, this is just a passion project for you. We don't know that you're going to take it as seriously as we would hope. So they might not follow through with you, but they might pursue it. An opportunity with somebody else instead.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that comes from the discussions of what are your goals? Because that would be something that would be discussed when you meet with the attorney, when you meet with the CPA, is letting them know, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to approach people. Then that would be like, okay, well, you need to have a separate entity structure. This is what's recommended. And the grants, you bring up a great point that a lot of people don't consider grants. They don't think about that. But a lot of the qualifications or requirements for certain grants that you're going to apply for is they don't want it to be to you. They want it to be to a separate entity. And so that's something that, again, knowing your goals, knowing what's out there for you is going to help dictate the next steps that you take.
Yeah. And it eliminates certain grants altogether if you don't have a business entity set up. For instance, if you request grants from the government, the requirement is that you complete your SAM ID.
Yep.
And if you don't have a SAM ID because you don't have a business entity, you can't get what they want to provide as support for early literacy initiatives and things of that nature. So we really can disqualify ourselves from a lot of opportunities without setting it up. Even if it's not set up immediately, it should be set up at some point.
Exactly.
Well, here's another thing that comes into the mix with us. It's sales tax. In our community, there's a strong advocacy for buying your books direct and selling your book from your website or from vendor events or from the perspective of wholesaling or working with people who buy your books in bulk. And when you sell books direct, you have to pay, in my case, the great state of Georgia, sales tax.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about sales tax, because that might not be something that comes into view initially. Well, when the children's book author journey is starting up.
That is a great point. Some things that I like to tell people about sales tax is sales tax is a state imposed tax. It's something that you need to be aware of what your state regulations are. Also, because you're selling and we're in the age of e-commerce, you also need to understand that you might hit nexus in other states. Even if you're in a state that doesn't require you to collect sales tax, you selling your book directly to the consumer in another state that requires you to collect sales tax when you hit a certain level, you are still on the hook for that. You definitely need to know what state you're selling in. You need to be aware of nexus. And what nexus is basically when you hit a certain threshold in that state. So you now have triggered that you have to collect sales tax and remit sales tax. And so when you hit that, you need to be aware that each state has different requirements. You need to be aware when you need to be submitting, because some states are going to have monthly requirements, some are going to have quarterly, and some are going to have annual, depending on the level of nexus that you hit. You want to make sure that you're aware of all this. And that could be a big task to take on when, you know, you just came into this because you had a story that you wanted to tell, when you don't realize that the tax side is just as important and you can get penalized for it. Sales tax is something that you definitely need to be aware of when you are selling a product. Some states actually impose sales tax on services. So you need to be aware if that's something that you have in your wheelhouse that you need to be aware of, or something that you need to outsource, because it's going to be something that comes up. A lot of people think, like you said, in the state of Georgia, a lot of people think, well, if I didn't collect sales tax, then I'm not going to be on the hook for it. And that's not the case. If you sold a product that you were supposed to charge sales tax so that you could remit that to the government and you didn't, you would still be on the hook for it. So the best bet is for you to charge the sales tax when you are required so that you can remit the right amount, so that you're not being penalized for having to pay something that you actually didn't collect on. So you definitely want to be aware of your state's requirements when it comes to sales tax, and that can get very cumbersome.
Where should someone go to get this information about the specific state that they're in?
You would go to your state revenue department. It's typically like the georgia.gov revenue site. And then you would have to research the sales tax requirements, sales and use tax. They typically have a section that you're going to go to. And if you have to register, you're going to register there so you can get a number, and then you can log into your account. Typically, they're going to track and send you how often, the frequency that you're going to have to submit. And when you are actually selling books on different platforms, typically you want to make sure that you're using something that's going to track your sales in different states. I know Shopify is going to have stuff that's going to track it for you. You're able to sign up for services, sales tax services that you can sign up for. It will connect to your Shopify, and then they will tell you when you hit Nexus in a state. So you now have to register in that state so that you can remit sales tax in that state. There are a couple of steps that you need to take, but the main step is to make sure in your state, do you have to be collecting sales tax? Because that's going to be the first kind of line of defense to know, so that you get used to the process of actual sales tax collection.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I very strongly advocate for Shopify, but I didn't realize that there are services that could plug into my Shopify details to let me know when I should be paying taxes and that the amounts are due.
Avalara is one. And there's another one. It's at the tip of my tongue and I don't know why. TaxJar. I'm like, how can I not? TaxJar. That's another one that does sales tax. And, you know, it's an e-commerce platform. So you connect things and work things. But again, just like with cloud-based accounting software, everybody knows about QuickBooks. I tell everybody, I give the disclaimer that QuickBooks was created by accountants for accountants. And while it's the most used, it's still an accounting platform. So if you don't know how to use it, you might risk, you know, messing something up. And so you want to make sure that either you're going to be working with TaxJar, Avalara with their full service, or having somebody work it for you so that you can ensure that it's getting done. Because like all the platforms, they have the done for you and they have the DIY. Mm-hmm. If you sign up for the DIY, the platform will collect things for you, but you're the one responsible for, you know, submitting these reports and stuff. So you just want to make sure that you understand how to use them.
That's a really helpful tip. I'll make sure to include that in the show notes.
Yep.
But here's the converse. What if someone has been in market with their children's books, may even have merchandise, and for 3 or 4 years didn't realize they should be paying sales tax? What's the penalty?
Before we go on to the next subject, let me ask you one quick question. Have you learned anything yet during this podcast episode that you didn't know already? If that's the case, please do me a favor and go leave a review of the podcast. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also leave a review on Spotify. Either way, I love your feedback, and I really want to know what you're taking away from listening to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast. And oh, by the way, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast. That way, you're notified each time a new episode airs, and when it goes live, you will want to be the first to know. I really do appreciate you listening and tuning in. Now, let's get back to the episode. Hey, it's
so
Nikella.
Real quick, like I said before with the commingling, you can't fix what happened in the past.
Marketing podcast.
But the best thing that if I can tell people is get compliant.
I want to invite you
now.
To do that.
So
right
you want to make sure that now that you heard this, now that this is
service,
a light bulb,
that way
do the research and find out if you are required to be submitting
each time an episode
sales tax
goes live, you'll
because you
always
can get compliant
be notified
now
that it will
going
be there waiting for
and,
you. So you never have to try to
set yourself up for the right thing. I can tell you
track of it
in every sense. So like I said, sales tax is state.
When
level,
you subscribe,
are behind
you're showing
on their
your
taxes,
support,
the IRS level.
And I appreciate
once
that. So
the government
thank
comes
you
after
for tuning
you,
in. Now,
it's going
to
be worse
back
for
to
you
the podcast.
Because they're behind on things. So when they come after you, it's going to be a backlog of stuff with the interest and penalties. So if you can figure out your issue yourself and get compliant, then it's always best than getting a notice. Because once the notices start coming, that means that you're really behind. They finally caught up and now they're coming to collect. And it's probably going to be a bigger issue than if you were to get compliant on your own.
Oh, so I heard interest penalty fees.
Yes.
Now, I can assure you that is not something that most children's book authors anticipate as a result of not paying sales tax. So to avoid this, getting compliant should be a priority.
Yes. I always advocate for people to get compliant when something comes up. So if you've never collected sales tax because you've never known, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you know, ignorance of the law is not a defense that it's going to stand up. So now that you know is now when you should be proactive and look into getting compliant. Figure out, okay, does my state require me to do sales tax? If the answer is yes, now I need to take the next step to figure out what I need to do to submit the sales tax, because you don't want them to have to come after you and tell you, it's been 60 months. You haven't submitted this. That's going to be a little bit harder to swallow.
That's a difficult conversation to process. All right. So you can't unhear this. you can't unhear it. You cannot feign ignorance.
Yeah.
Because the information has been made available. Good to know. All right. So let's talk about something else. Because we're talking about commingling to distinguishing business from household funds and expenses, we can go from being out of compliance with sales tax to very quickly getting in gear to get compliant with sales tax. What should be done with all of the receipts that have been amassed? Granted, somebody saved all of the receipts that have been amassed.
So when it comes to receipts, there are a few things that I like people to be aware of. We're in the day and age where we don't have to have a shoebox full of receipts. We can digitize things. So the minute you get a receipt, if it's not something that's electronic because you bought it online, take a picture of that receipt so that it's now a digital copy. And I always tell people that they should create an email account that's, you know, receipts or invoices at thepodcast.com and send all of your receipts there. So you always have when it was taken, you have it, you snap a picture, the subject line would be what this receipt was for. And you've kind of created like a digital file cabinet because they don't make receipts the way they used to. When we had the shoebox accounting, those receipts lasted. These receipts do not last the same. I don't know what the paper, the ink, I don't know what they're doing, but you're going to lose out on that those expenses because what I've seen so many times within the last 5 years is people save receipts and literally when they go to open it, the receipt is blank. It's like it's a blank piece of paper. You have no idea what that receipt was for. So get into the habit of taking a picture and emailing it to that email address so that you have that file cabinet. Another thing that I like to tell people about is cloud-based accounting software. So I touched on it a little bit. QuickBooks is what's most known, but there are other cloud-based accounting softwares. You connect your banking to there, and it's going to keep track of all of the transactions. So that's where you can make sure that everything is being accounted for so that the bookkeeping can actually be done on the actual numbers. With QuickBooks, with the other ones, you're able to attach the actual receipt to the transaction. So that's another way that you can keep track of your receipts. And so just get into the habit of that. I know I talked about QuickBooks, but Xero is another one that it's a cloud-based accounting software. It's a competitor to QuickBooks, but it's X-E-R-O. And what I like about Xero is that I find it's more end-user friendly. So for the DIYers who are going to do it on their own, I just find that Xero speaks more the language that they're used to. So, you know, things like who did you pay? What did you pay for? So it triggers you to think more. Whereas QuickBooks, like I said, it's created by accountants. So it's going to be a self-balancing system. You're going to have debits and credits. It's going to look like an accounting software. And so that's why I think Xero is a little bit user-friendly. And that's why I recommend that one. But make sure your transactions are being categorized correctly and your bookkeeping is done, because the shoebox bookkeeping doesn't work anymore. And it's not because we are lazy. It's they don't make receipts the same way. So many times people come with receipts and I'm literally like, the receipt is faded and there's like, I don't know how to give you credit for this deduction. Like, I don't even know what this is. You don't even know what this is. And a lot of times people, by scanning it and taking a picture, you're going to create that directory because you don't remember what you purchased 2 months ago, let alone 11 months ago. A lot of times people think that they're going to remember everything that they purchase. They do not. That's why it's so hard for people to keep budgets, even in just in your personal life. You do not remember what you spend money on. That's why when it comes time to prepare your budget, you're like, I spent $300 on takeout. We only went out to eat like 2 times. No, yeah. You went out to eat 7. So like, you don't remember what you spend your money on, even if you have the best intentions. There's just too many things happening. So get into the habit of having your bookkeeping connected to a cloud-based system so that your bookkeeping can be done as it's happening.
Very good tips and insights, Atiya. Xero will be added to the show notes, as well as QuickBooks, if there's anybody in here who wants to give it a go.
Yeah.
Being an accountant's apprentice. If that's the best way to go for somebody, in Xero's the other, we'll have both resources listed there. Really good insight also into keeping receipts. But what's the purpose of keeping receipts?
Oh, okay. Well, the purpose comes along should you have to prove this. So if you get audited, or if the government requests you to show and, you know, prove your deductions, that's where the receipts come in. Because to file your actual tax return, a lot of people don't realize that to file your return, you don't have to submit all the receipts. Back when I first started 17 years ago, we would prepare a return, staple all of the backup. It was like something that everything went in. We don't do that anymore. With e-filing and all of that, nothing gets sent in anymore. So think of the government from their perspective. They have to cross their T's, dot their I's, because they're issuing refunds from things that people are submitting. They need to know that what's being issued is correct. So if you get audited and they say, okay, well, we're going to give you this refund for whatever, but we need to know that this $10,000 was actual deductions. You need to show the actual deductions. You need to show the receipts. You need to show the invoices. You need to show all of that stuff. So while you didn't need the proof to file the return, you do need it if you get questioned about it and to validate the actual expenses. So that's why you need to keep receipts and make sure that you have your records, is because they can come back and ask you for it. And if you don't have it and there's no explanation or anything, it could be disallowed. And then if it's disallowed, that means that it's no longer a deduction. So it gets added back as income, right? And so now you're going to have to pay interest and penalties from whatever year that was. So if they come at you and say, okay, we're auditing 2019, that's 4 years ago, they're going to say, okay, well, technically 4 years ago, you owed us $10,000. Because you put it as an expense, that's going to be interest and penalties from 4 years ago. So it all adds up, and you want to make sure that that's not something that comes up.
Such a good point that you raised, because I wanted to really point out what's the point, not just to file, but to protect yourself.
Yep.
And I've never been audited, knock on wood. Nor have I ever considered that I might be, but I think all of us can do more to protect ourselves from a taxability standpoint. And the more you say penalties and interest, the more it freaks me out. So make sure I have neither of those.
Yeah.
Neither of those.
It's definitely to cover your own, you know, CYA, make sure that you're prepared. It's not meant to scare you. It's just meant to say the reality of it is that if you get questioned, you need to be able to prove those deductions.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you work with small business owners of all types, not just in the publishing realm.
Yep.
And from what I understand, you have something that you have recently released where you pour out so much of your knowledge and insight.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your recently released book?
Yes. So I actually am a first-time author. I wrote a book. It's called Savvy Tax Strategies for Small Business Owners. And what it is, it's a compilation to help you get your bookkeeping in order and understand tax strategies, because a lot of times small business owners don't realize that the tax code was written to help them with their tax liability. So the tax code is not just something that's there for you to just know that it exists. It's for you to research it and see what in it applies to my situation so I can reduce what I have to pay legally. And thus, reducing what I have to pay in taxes, I keep more of that money in my business so that I can help build my business and help with my family. I give strategies on how you can reduce your tax liability and how you can get your bookkeeping in order, just to make sure, because a lot of times when it comes to taxes, I do talk about taxes a lot, but people do not realize how closely related bookkeeping is to taxes. When I talk about, when I start my conversations with bookkeeping, they're always like, well, I thought you were the tax. I'm like, yeah, I am the tax person, but these numbers go into the tax part. So you need to have your bookkeeping in order. And so the book is going to help you master your bookkeeping and get tax strategies so that you can reduce what you pay in your taxes.
So I want to make sure everybody who listens to the Children's Book Marketing Podcast knows about your book.
Okay.
And I want to make sure they know that it's for them, not just it's small business at large. Businesses like ours, where yes, we have expenses every month, we have receipts that we accumulate, we have sales tax that we have to pay, we have documentation that we need in order to secure our ability to not have to pay taxes with interest and penalties.
Yes.
So I will make sure to link that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
There may be some questions that come up as a result of some of the things that you've shared. This is not the only time we will have you on the Children's Book Marketing Podcast, but since this is the first time, I want to make sure folks know where to find you. So what's the best way for people to reach you?
Yes. So the best way is you can find me on social media at The Savvy Accountant across all platforms. That's going to be me. And you guys are able to go to my website, thesavvyaccountant.com. It's easiest to find me on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram, and just send me a message and then we can schedule a discovery call so that we can, you know, figure out what your needs are.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing how to find you, how people can get in touch with you. Call her. She is licensed to provide accounting services across the United States, not just in her state.
Yes.
And if you are looking for specific answers to questions, she is the right person to ask about all things related to taxes and bookkeeping. So I'm going to thank you for joining us today and make sure you know how much we appreciate you, because taxes are not as delightful as illustrations and editing, but it is necessary for us to be aware of what we need to do with it. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. We will connect again for the next conversation with the Children's Book Marketing Podcast.